Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to IPH Limited Financial Year 2016 Results Announcement. David, please begin.
Good morning, everyone. David Griffith here. I have with me Dr. Andrew Blattman, the CEO of Spruson & Ferguson, Malcolm Mitchell, the Chief Financial Officer of IPH, and John Wadley, the Deputy Chief Financial Officer of IPH. Thank you for taking the time to listen in on our report this morning. I'm sure you've all seen the reported results that we put out on the ASX, and I have to say that we're extremely pleased with the results that we have we've produced for the year for our shareholders. The financial highlights, which I'll run through briefly, our underlying net profit after tax of $46.9 million, or earnings per share of 26.2 cents, 50% ahead of financial year 15. And in our underlying results, as you'll see from the presentation document, our EBITDA is up 53%. Our NPAT, of course, 50%. EPS, 32%. And total dividends, of course, the previous year was a bit of a short year, but up 56%. So I think we're very proud of what we've achieved. We've got a lot in the pipeline, and by and large, things are going very well. So on a like-for-like constant currency basis, excluding our acquisitions, our earnings growth is in line with the market trends over recent years. The revenue to earnings were biased towards the first half of the year. Particularly in Asia, we get a bigger benefit in Asia because of the way we're structured there. This was due to a pull forward of filing caused by the America Invents Act, which everybody's talked about widely. The year-on-year net benefits derived from foreign exchange movements have helped. We have an incremental $12.4 million EBITDA from our new acquisitions. We've increased our development expenditure on Practice Insight business, which has got a very exciting future in the next few years, and for many years after that, we're absolutely certain about. We have free cash flow of $39.1 million compared to $30.4 million in financial year 15. We have cash of $58.5 million, no debt, and $95 million of undrawn bank facilities. And our final dividend is 10 cents a share, of which 50% is franked. And we haven't saw the need to activate the DRP again on this occasion. So with our acquisitions, turning to page 6 of the slide pack, Pizzy's was completed in September 15, Callanan's November 15, Cullen's July 16. And we have a strong pipeline of acquisitions and expansion opportunities. As you know, we've talked about this pipeline before. We've had to allow a couple to drop off, but the main ones that we are involved with, which are fairly complex, but they're certainly exciting in our view, and they're really a step up, are still on foot, and we are working diligently towards closing those. In Asia, IPH and Spruson & Ferguson have maintained its number one patent market share position in Singapore with approximately 25%. In financial year 16, Spruson & Ferguson Asia increased its total patent filings by 6.5% on the previous year. It also recommenced the trademark business in November 15. We opened an office for Pizzy's in Singapore in February 16. We've opened offices in Indonesia and Thailand in March and June of this year, and we've had wholly owned foreign enterprises approved in Shanghai and Beijing. The first half of 16, the America Invents Act stimulated growth in patent filings in Australia and Asia. In Australia, we've strengthened our market position with the acquisition of Pizzy's. We've talked about that before, but a very successful market-driven firm. Callanan's, which was more of a acquisition of a firm where the principals were close to retirement, and Cullen's, which is a very active firm in Brisbane with a very high percentage of local client originating work. So as a group, IPH holds the number one patent share in Australia of about 22%. Our trademarks are around 13%. of the trademark applications filed by professional advisors. Spruson and Ferguson has maintained its number one position of patent filings in Australia, and the strategic merger of Fisher Adams and Kelly and Callanan's practices in November 15 allowed us to bring in some very significant cost out after closing the Callanan's office in Melbourne. So in our operations, our efficiencies continue to improve due to our very high quality IT systems. We've strengthened our management team with key appointments in at IPH, and a number of senior professional promotions across the group to ensure the continuity and regeneration of the business, in particular new principals appointed in Spruson and Ferguson and Fisher Adams and Kelly. Practice insight, this is now getting to more of a market-focused product development. New sales and support office in Munich was opened last September, and to ensure that we have better reach in the key markets in USA and Europe, and we have launched new products. It's early days for them. We're certainly very excited about the future of that. We have the best sales and marketing team that we could possibly get in intellectual property sitting in our Munich office. I'll now pass over to Andrew Blattman to talk about the business performance and market update.
Good. Many thanks, David, for that introduction, and also pass on my welcome and thanks to those on the telephone. I'm now at page 8 of the presentation, the business snapshot, and from the Spruson & Ferguson perspective, it's been a terrific year, and I can see that experience has been reflected in all the business units underneath the IPH banner. And just stepping through these individual windows on page 8, essentially, the IPH group sits at 420 employees. I mean, it's getting bigger through acquisition, but at the same time, it's another opportunity for us to look at the experience we've had in Spruson and Ferguson. When I look at our scenario in June 2014, pre our incorporation and pre our listing, we had a headcount of about 165, and June 16 we were about 130. And if I look back 10 years ago, the Spruson & Ferguson headcount was about 230. So the IT spend and the IT sophistication has given the Spruson's group a leaner employee base, primarily through natural attrition, and that same opportunity will be leveraged into the other business units in the future. So the brands, David's already talked about those that sit underneath the IPH group. The offices, I mean, 2016 year saw the addition of two new offices in for the Spruson & Ferguson group. In March this year, we opened the Indonesian office in Jakarta, and in on the 31st of May, we opened in Bangkok, Thailand, with quite a significant presence there, with a group led by Dan Greif, a senior U.S. Trademark attorney resident in Bangkok, coming across and setting up a good critical mass from day one. So that's very exciting. And of course, the other office opening in last year was in the Practice Insight sales office in Munich, Germany. The other window there of interest is the 6,000 clients or 6,000 plus clients. That's interesting to me because 2 years ago, the Spruson & Ferguson Group, when we were the only business unit under IPH, we had about 4,000 clients, probably even a bit less. And this again represents opportunity to put those additional clients into our Southeast Asian network. So that's great to see more clients coming into the group, which then means more opportunities for a second or a third or a fourth bite of the cherry as they progress through the rest of Southeast Asia, where our coverage is extreme. The market share, I'm pleased to say the IPH group sits at number one, significantly above our closest competitor, almost 10% above our closest friends in that market. And Spruson & Ferguson there remains the number one position, as it does in Singapore, which is at the 25% market share. The filings, 16,000 patent filings in the year, 4,000 trademark applications filed, 16,000 patents. There'd be very few patent firms, private practice patent firms in the world with that volume of patent filings. I guess in the context of renewal and regeneration and continuity of service, as David's intimated in his remarks, we have made 14 new principals in the Brisbane and Ferguson group alone in the last 12 months, 12 in the Sydney office, five in Sydney and another seven in Singapore and the new appointments in our Thailand and Indonesian office, new principals there too. So that's a terrific outcome, and I understand that the FAK has also made an additional principal appointment. So that's the snapshot under that window. And then stepping into slide 9, we're looking at the market overview, and we've always been consistent in what we've said there, and that the bulk of the work that comes into the IPH network comes from where patent filings come from, and that's the US, Japan, Europe, and to a lesser extent, Korea. And the most common vehicle to achieve that is the PCT patent application. And what we show in slide 9 is this renormalisation of PCT filings. We talked about the American Invents Act, and David mentioned in his preliminary comments, and it's probably worthwhile just stepping back and spending some time on this American Invents Act again, just so we can all refamiliarise ourselves with it. What happened was a law change in the US which came into effect in March 2013 that caused a surge in US first filings in 2013 that, of course, caused a surge in PCTs 12 months later in March 14. And then the nationals, which come 18 months after that, peaked in September 15. Somewhat reminiscent, I guess, of what we saw in the Raising the Bar Act in Australia in 2013, which caused a spike in filings. And we saw a spike in filings, and as Malcolm will reflect in his financials, that spike was particularly prevalent in the Asian business, where not only do we get an increase in one jurisdiction like we did in Australia, it might be 5, 6, or 7 because our coverage is so much broader there. And indeed, in September last year, we had a record a filing in the Singapore office. But going forward, we see the PCTs, as I say, is normalised again, and some nice increases in Europe and Japan in the last calendar years. So the outlook remains strong, I think, for cases coming down the pipe that will eventually land in our markets. So I'm now moving to slide 10, which is the kind of sets out that secondary market position. And many of these slides, you've seen these trend lines before. Figure 2 is the Asian market, and it's a little bit of a complicated slide because we've got so many countries there, but essentially the compound annual growth rate is good, 8% in the last 5 years. It's quite difficult to get yearly figures in some of those Asian markets beyond Singapore, so it's calendar year 14 is the most comprehensive data we have there. And I guess what that figures show is that the strongest growth have occurred in Thailand and Indonesia. So we're going where our clients are going, and that's why we've opened our offices there. The figure 3 is the Chinese position. You can see it's a very large, high volume market with high growth, primarily driven by the Chinese resident market with their own domestic filings. But there's still for us, an addressable market of over 120,000 applications a year from coming into China. And as we've said on many occasions, it's important for us, and then part of our organic growth is to take our existing client base and as much as we can drop it into these new markets. The Australian market, figure 4, is what we've always said is consistent with our comments that have gone from the prospectus forward. It's mature, and growth rate reflects that. Singapore, we've been able to see some moderate growth there, and you can see in my next slide, in slide 11, that we've even increased our market share there in the last couple of years, although there's moderate growth in Singapore. So going on to slide 11, I guess the first window there, figure 6, reflects we said what we did. We've done what we said we would do. We've consolidated the Australian market in our listing in 14, we were at 11%. We're now, the IPH groups are 22%. And Singapore will Singapore really is the Australian, is Spruce and Fergus in Singapore, and as I say, we're at this stage we're continuing to increase the market share, and who knows what as Pizzi's gets some, the Pizzi Singapore office gets some momentum going forward. They only opened earlier this year. This figure eight reflects the market share in the other jurisdictions in Asia, and as I say, it's calendar year 14. Very difficult to get up to date results. Again, as I've said on many occasions, this is our opportunity slide, and this is where we want to go with our filings going forward. So going on to slide 12, which is my last slide in the presentation, I guess it reflects the growth that's come with the consolidation of the market from 14 to 16. As I say, 16,000 patent applications filed. Very few firms in the world will be at that volume. An interesting aside there, and one that's worth just reflecting on briefly, is the IPH group's also filing 330, in excess of 330, last year, 330 PCT applications. And that's these applications from domestic clients, either in Australia or in Singapore, that then file their own national cases going forward. And I think, again, reflecting on some recent figures from some of our friends, the IPH group is filing the most number of PCT filings in this space. And they, of course, reflect the domestic work of our clients in either Australia and Singapore. The trademark filings in Figure 10, again, almost doubled in the last 2 years. The interesting thing there, as David's indicated, is, and the most wonderful thing, is the reopening the Asian practice in November last year, and under the guidance of our team there, particularly with the addition of Dan Greif coming into the Bangkok office, the Thailand office, we see some great opportunities that he'll bring, and having that service will bring across the group. So that's the snapshot, and I'll pass back to David for the acquisitions.
Thanks, Andrew. As you know, in the previous financial year, we acquired Fisher Adams and Kelly, and in the financial year just completed, the 16 year, we acquired Pizzi's in September 15. They're based in Brisbane and Canberra, a very successful firm in marketing itself, more than anyone else in Australia. They have a strong foreign client base. They don't look at for local clients so much. They're mainly focused on foreign associates and corporate clients in North America, Japan, and Europe. The cost of Pizzi's was $72.1 million. Which was settled 50% in cash and the balance by the issue of 6.7 million new IPH shares, which are escrowed for 2 years. That's the model we try to stick to with these acquisitions, 50% cash and 50% shares where possible. So we also offered them, because of their strong growth and earn-out, based on their financial year 16 earnings of 6.6 million and the issue of 1.23 million new IPH shares. So those new shares will also be escrowed for 2 years from the date of issue. Of course, immediately EPS accretive, and because of the nature of their strong foreign client base, it was thought worth opening an office in Singapore for them, which we did in February 16. It's a very cost-effective office. It's in the same building as Spruson and Ferguson up there, and the IT systems are all centralised whilst the databases are kept entirely separate. The acquisition of Callanan's in early November 15 was, as I mentioned earlier, the acquisition of a firm where you had three partners looking to retire, and so we were able to bring that client base into Fisher Adams and Kelly, and a lot of cost out involved in that. The acquisition of that firm was at a much lower valuation or PE than we had to pay, or that we were happy to pay for Pizzi's, and similarly with Cullen's later in the year. But as you can see, the consideration is $5.5 million, 50 cash, and the balance by the issue of nearly 400,000 new IPH shares, which are also escrowed for 2 years, with a potential earn-out based on the client retention of up to $2 million and 140,000 new IPH shares. Again, dramatically EPS accretive. The merger with Fisher Adams and Kelly's gone well, and the synergies and the cost out of that acquisition are very worthwhile. Cullen's a very good quality Brisbane-based firm. We completed that acquisition on the 30th of June 16. Took some months longer than expected. Nothing particularly untoward. It's just that these acquisitions, whilst, you know, in a perfect world, would happen a lot faster. When you get into DD and everybody's coming from private practices where they've been just owned by a small number of partners, to get them into shape for a public company level requires a lot more work than obviously we anticipated. But anyway, it's a very good firm, high quality people, about 70% local client base. And when Andrew mentions the number of patent cooperation originating cases we file, Cullens contributes strongly to that. So the consideration of Cullens is $35.6 million, 50% cash, and the balance by the issue of 2.5 billion UIPH shares escrowed for 2 years. There is an earn-out. We were so close to the end of the financial year, so there's an earn-out of another $3.4 million, an issue of nearly 500,000 UIPH shares. Again, escrowed 2 years from the date of issue. Again, immediately EPS accretive. So with that, I'll pass over to Malcolm Mitchell to walk you through the financial results.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. If we can turn to slide 16, what we've done here is provided a presentation of the earnings of the business in a slightly different format from what you've seen before. But it's very much in line with the format, a synopsis of the format that the management looks at their results on, and that, for that matter, the board is informed of our results. It essentially breaks down the trading operations of the group from the more strategic activities of the group, and splits out the main IP businesses from data services for the first time and the corporate office for the first time. The trading result that we have there includes the acquisitions that that came through in the year, but also includes the foreign exchange benefits. As you will know, having followed the company for a while, we have a fairly large exposure on our earnings to the U.S. dollar. In fact, more than 100% of our EBITDA earnings are actually denominated in U.S. dollars if you split out the whole of the P&L, and that gives us a benefit while the U.S. dollar is strengthening, and it reduces profits when the U.S. dollar is weakening. The result, as David mentioned, was skewed to the first half. Once the analysts get to go through the numbers and analyze it out, they'll find that the revenue in the first half was $3 million stronger than the second half, once you've excluded the changes that went on. That was very much driven by the American Invents Act. The other issue that we had in the second half was, as you'd be aware, we acquired the Callinan's business in November, at the end of November last year. In the second half, that business was in a transition phase and was definitely not providing the contribution that we were predicating the acquisition on, as we were closing the office and so on. We've taken the costs off that in the items that reconcile the underlying profit to the statutory profit, but there was also an impact in the trading result of the order of 400 to 500,000 of earnings that were not there as that particular component of the business was going through its transition. What we're confident to say now is that we have now closed the Melbourne office. We've taken the restructuring costs associated with that, but that's left us with an earnings profile for that particular acquisition of Callinan's, which actually gives a better investment return than it was predicated on at the time of the acquisition. It was certainly a more speedy merger and closure of the Callinan's office than we had anticipated when we first acquired the business. But it has an immediate benefit to us now that has happened. If we turn to slide 17, I think this is just another snapshot of how the statutory result reconciles to the underlying result. And the main message coming off that page is that we are now going to have an amortization charge coming through each period, being an amortization of the intangibles that we have acquired through the acquisitions, and the main intangible that has the largest impact on the amortization charge is the customer relationship intangible that is being depreciated, or amortized, I should say, over a 10-year period. That'll continue for the next, obviously, number of years as that asset is written down. Turning to page 18 of the slides, another picture of how we've grown over the last 4 years, and you know, showing a strong message of growth in both the Asian operations and in the Spruce and Ferguson Australian operations, and now being augmented as the earnings from the new acquisitions are starting to come through. Obviously, in the following year, we're going to get the whole benefit for the whole of the year of the acquisitions we've done. The Cullens acquisition really hasn't impacted this result at all since it was completed on the 30th of June, and we will see that component of new acquisitions increase in the coming year. Turning to slide 19, this is one that I prepare really for the analysts to get to the bottom of the currency exposure, and breaks out the from the underlying result that brings together new businesses, currency, and so on, the components that are new business and currency, and gives a like with like, in other words, constant currency view of what is happening on the revenue line and on the EBITDA line. And the percentage in the bottom right-hand corner of those tables of 8% is the underlying growth on a like-with-like basis, excluding the new businesses, and it gives us a constant currency. For those analyst models wanting to triangulate up the actual rates that have been used, I've provided a table there to help you calculating how that. Adjustment has been calculated. Turning to the slide 20, cash flow, in my view, is the strongest aspect of this of the IPH group, and the strong cash conversion ratio of how much of our EBITDA turns into cash that we can utilize, obviously to pay taxes and our interest in the first place, but pay the dividends and then invest for the business. It supports it supports our abilities to pay the high level of dividends payouts, and the dividends that we've announced in the current for the whole of FY16 comprise 90% of the cash adjusted earnings of the group. The capital expenditure in the year was slightly higher. This was really the items that didn't get completed in FY15. The two data centers were still the capital expenditure had largely not come through. If you remember in the prospectus, the cash flow for CapEx was of the order of $2 million. But we have now caught up on that major project, and that. So has that's impacted in FY16. We've also seeing a larger contribution or component being the capitalization of the software, both Spruson and Ferguson developments that are happening with our internal systems, and also Practice Insight as they develop up their software products. The developer side of that is analyzed and capitalized. In the other item affecting the cash flow, last year the group was still not into the provisional tax payment system. We now are in that system, and there was a resulting catch-up of tax on that. We'll now see a more regular tax payments coming through going forward. The slide 21, the balance sheet, really. The main message there is the additions of the new businesses, but and also the monies we raised before Christmas. We still have $58 million of cash sitting on our balance sheet to support our acquisition program. We have an undrawn facility with the ANZ Bank of $95 million. So there's plenty of capacity on this balance, a very strong balance sheet, and plenty of capacity for the acquisitions that we have coming through the pipeline. Turning to the last slide, again, on the financial section, 22, very much a slide that I've just updated from ones you've seen previously. The major change in the currency sensitivity is that arising from the inclusion of Cullen's exposures, but giving the analysts, again, numbers to work on to build their models for understanding how the earnings of the group are sensitive to currency movements. On that, I'll hand back to David to talk about the outlook for the company for the coming year.
Thank you, Malcolm. So on slide 24, the main theme is that our Australian and Asian businesses have continued growing in line with underlying market trends in recent years. So as we've always said, Australia is a mature market with basically GDP-style growth, but the Asian businesses or the Asian countries are ones where the growth exceeds that, and we believe that by, as Andrew said, following to our clients to the countries of interest to them, we can get a bigger share of growing markets. So we hold out very strong expectations of good growth in our Asian operations. The incremental earnings contributions from the new businesses acquired in the last year, we're very confident of the fact that these will grow. The people in those businesses are very enthusiastic and committed to growing and developing their practices, and also through the implementation of better IT systems that have been developed at Spruson and Ferguson. So the incremental Asian growth, as we set up new offices, will expect to be ramped up through the year. That's not just in patents, but also in the development of our trademark practice. And people like Dan Greif, who Andrew mentioned earlier, we see as being wonderful key people to have on board to assist in that and lead it. Practice Insight, you'll see we've flagged an increase in development costs. This is not just development, but it's also sales teams in Europe and North America. We hold out a great expectations of Practice Insight, the world-class team developing software in the big data area, which can be monetized and sold to clients. And their products that they're developing are not nice-to-haves. We believe they're in the must-have areas for private practice firms in North America, Japan, China, Europe, almost anywhere in the world, as well as corporations with in-house patent departments, universities, and others. So we've recently completed a full top-to-bottom analysis of the products, the markets, and we're enhancing the leadership team there so that Tom Haynes can continue to focus on the very important work of getting best-in-breed of software and selling this as software as a service and on an annual recurring license fee revenue base. And we think that there is massive value in the years ahead for Practice Insight products. So our continued improvement in operational efficiency through IPH services, software teams, and our ramped up finance department and corporate governance areas, we think we're in pretty good shape in that regard. So we will be expanding into new secondary IP markets where we currently have little or no exposure through accretive acquisitions or establishment of new offices. We're certainly, as I said earlier, involved in due diligence, which is complex. Once you get to foreign countries, you get more people involved, you get more lawyers, more accountants, and the cost does go up. But we believe these are the areas of natural growth for us, which will be compelling offerings to our clients, and this is to grow. We have to be in these areas, as well as continuing to explore the adjacent areas of intellectual property by further acquisition or organic growth. However, I do say that we're very excited by Practice Insight products. So, finally, I'll pass over, so it's not the final, but Malcolm Mitchell is going to just briefly mention about the forthcoming.
The other matter coming up in the next year, which I'm sure a lot of shareholders will be conscious of, is that the former principals of Spruson and Ferguson, or the former trustees, I should say, of Spruson and Ferguson Trust, who sold the business into the IPO in FY14, will have the shares that have been in escrow, the 78 million shares in escrow, coming out of escrow on the 19th of November. IPH has appointed Macquarie and Morgan's Financial as its financial advisors. We intend to help facilitate a share sale facility for those principals' shares and give them the opportunity to take those shares to market in a structured and orderly fashion. And we've appointed Morgans and Macquarie as our financial advisors in relation to that sale of shares. So the matter is obviously one we seek to ensure happens in an orderly way that leaves the market confident with the position of what's happening as far as demand and supply for shares is concerned.
Okay, well, thanks, Malcolm. Slide 26 is just encapsulation of our IPH growth strategy, which I just discussed in the section just before Malcolm mentioned about the escrow. I won't go into that again because it really summarises what we're discussing, but we have a lot of things happening, and we think that this is going to position IPH it will be the world-class firm in the years going forward and provide a solid base for all of our shareholders and staff and provide excellent work and facilities for our clients. So with that, there are various appendices which I'm sure you can all look at to be helpful in understanding where we are, and we could turn over for questions now. Thank you.
Hello?
Hello, David. Are we ready for Q&A session?
Yes, we are.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Participants with question to pose, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now and you'll be placed in the queue. To cancel the queue, please press 02. Once again, 01 on your telephone keypad now. Our first question, Nick Halley, please go ahead.
All right, guys. Are you able to give me any help on sort of with all the acquisitions now from in Australia put to bed, is there sort of any help on what the annualised cost savings would be, or is it not that material that I have to push it through to the model?
On the cost savings side, Nick, there's really not substantial cost savings while these businesses remain as standalone businesses. They're not running with any excess. There's a few minor things that we can do, like bringing insurance together and maybe a bit of savings on the IT side of things. However, there's nothing of huge cost synergies of merging businesses. We've achieved those obviously with the Callinan's acquisition, but not for the Cullens or Pizzies because they are standalone entities. Going forward, we've always talked about down the track of having a shared services arrangement for all the group. And that is certainly a project that's there in the more medium term of something to look at, and that'll be more substantial. And when we have a project that we believe is clear to us, we'll come forward with that. But we do believe there's a prize out there bringing the back ends of these businesses together in a much more coordinated way.
But Nick, I'm going to say that, for example, the three firms in Brisbane come from a smaller base. Pizzies has always had a very high margin, and by just the internal discussions, I think each of the CEOs of those firms is learning a lot about how to operate in a more efficient manner. And I think that the margins that they can just bring internally by thinking about their businesses with the guidance of IPH and the metrics that we have is helping them a lot. And I think we're seeing that coming through from them.
And just those costs, practice insight, the extra costs, will that all be expensed?
Yes.
Okay, great. That's all.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you. Our next question, Sam from Val Porter Securities. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. Just on the AIA impact, are there any early signs that that impact is now behind us with what you've seen on your monthly data coming through?
Yeah, Sam, it's Andrew. What we've seen, and it was consistent with the half-yearly presentation we gave, where we had a graph, you might recall it, that showed that the PCTs were back on track in terms of coming out of the US, and so we expect going forward we'll be back to where we were. I mean, I guess for us it wasn't as significant as the pull forward we saw in 2013, which you'll recall from the raising the bar. But it was more felt in the Asian practice because we had more countries exposed to the increase.
Yeah. So do you think, high single digit, do you think the Asian market will return to its long-term CAGR growth average in FY17?
Well, the PCT, again, looking at that slide 9, the CAGR there hasn't had a bit of a US is a big part of it, but it's not the only part of it, and so I think it should hopefully re-equilibrate to where the long-term averages have been, and they've always been an increased average, so it's a good, there's certainly no decrease in patent filings across the world.
Just on your acquisition strategy, to get some clarity on that. So, are you now looking totally on offshore markets and no longer looking in Australia moving forward?
It's interesting, Sam, and good morning. We're not actively chasing anyone in Australia. Not that we ever did chase anyone, but people do come to us because of our position now and because of some of the. I think what's happened in the profession is that there's an acceptance now of this corporate structure, and we've seen that in the ability to retain and increase our number of principals here at Spruce & Ferguson and the other firms, and so it's seen as a very viable employment alternative for people, which is very pleasing for us to see if we're provided that good environment. However, having said that, we're certainly not against any more local acquisitions, but there's only so many hours in the day, and for us the greater opportunity for IPH and our shareholders is outside of Australia. There may be another one in Australia, but right now it's less likely than more, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. And in Asia, does that include China in terms of your growth acquisition strategy?
Yes.
And any color on time frame in prospective acquisition?
how about a few months ago, Sam? look, seriously, foreign ones are more complex, and you have different regulatory environments. You have different, who has a right of practice, how much can foreigners earn. We've got to examine, everybody's compliance with all the normal regulatory environment they live in. So they do become more complex. And, we have to be careful, of course, in foreign jurisdictions. There are lots of traps for young players, as we've seen over the years in other industries. But, we are working hard, and we would certainly hope by the end of the year we'll have something worthwhile and significant. But really, you never know. Nothing's done till it's done, is it?
Yeah. And just on the DD that the upfront cost ahead of these future acquisitions, Is that included above the line or below the line for the result that you just announced?
That's below the line, Sam. If you go to slide 16, you'll see the first item in that reconciliation between underlying and statutory business acquisition costs. That's what we've spent largely on DD over the last year.
No, I'm talking about acquisitions you haven't executed on yet, just yet.
They're in anything we haven't executed is also in that number.
Okay. And final question, Practice Insights, that was operating at a loss through FY16, is that right?
That's right, lost $800,000 odd.
And so that will remain at a loss by that increased expense in FY17?
That'll go to between $3 and $4 million in FY17 loss.
Okay, thank you very much.
Just on that, after that, as we ramp up the sales team, and we are really looking to about mainly the last quarter of this current financial year to start to see the sales coming through in any sort of meaningful manner. And yeah, after that, we would hope that they accelerate pretty rapidly.
We should just say on Practice Insights, Sam, that the prize that we're shooting for is a very substantial prize, much far exceeding what we're talking about in the terms of costs today for making this, for building this business. We're shooting for a prize that could be of the order of $100 million is what we believe the size of business we're looking in value, the size of business that we're looking to achieve.
Or multiples thereof.
Yeah, we believe the profile that we have for the business going forward is we're accelerating its development today. We expect it to start to move into to a black figure sometime in FY18, and then start to deliver more substance in FY19. So that's the sort of profile we're talking about, and it's a large prize we're shooting for.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are currently no questions in queue. Once again, participants with questions to pose or to follow up, please press 0101 on your telephone keypad now. Our next question, Tom Tayo from Investor. Please go ahead.
Hello there, gentlemen. Firstly, congratulations on the results. Really good. I just have a question on slide number 19. Because I'm looking at the old sort of Australian IP, so I presume that is the old Spruson and Ferguson group and not counting the new company. Is that right? Yeah. So my question is why is the revenue grew by only 1%? Is that because no new clients are signing, or is it just general industry conditions? And another question relating to that is going forward, will the three new companies, Pizzy, Collins and Cullinans, will sort of share the same growth profile with the old Spruson and Ferguson group?
To answer your question, the Spruson and Ferguson group really sort of matches what the underlying market is able to deliver. If you look at the CAGR charts that are put earlier in the presentation, you'll see that we're talking about growth generally, which is in line with general GDP growth. And that's what these are mature businesses in Australia, and that's the level of growth that they achieve. Whether it's 1% today, and it was a larger number last year, but it averages out around that 3% growth year on year for the Australian market. As far as the other components that were the other businesses that have been acquired over the last year, the Fisher, Adam and Kelly, Cullens and so on, we expect them to follow similar patterns of growth. The only only company in the group that does have a history of stronger growth and growth by essentially taking market share has been Pizzy's, which we see able to grow something more than that GDP style growth. But generally speaking, the Australian market is a GDP, low growth market, mature market. Asia is where we can see greater growth on the revenue, and that obviously supports the earnings side of things.
Right. Okay. Got it. In terms of acquisition, when you look at, you know, acquiring a new company, what are some sort of, you know, key characteristics in the companies that you're interested in? Do they have to share, you know, some sort of client profile or anything like that? Or
from a client perspective, we really would prefer businesses we're acquiring is to not have conflicts of interest with our client base. Clearly, there's some industries where firms are concerned if you are operating for a competitor. Coca-Cola and Pepsi would be ones which you probably couldn't have the two of them under your one, looking after both of them. Apple and Samsung are probably another example. Complementary means lacking in conflicts for us.
But even that being said, Andrew Blattman here, I mean, the businesses do operate independently, so there's a full minimization of any legal conflict, and it's whether there's a perception of a commercial conflict which we can't control. But generally in this space, that's never been the issue we are in. I mean, the space we're in is not primarily contentious matters. We're not in... We have a small law firm in the Spruce and Ferguson, Australia, but otherwise we're in the patent prosecution, trademark prosecution before the patent office. And in a lot of the areas in Southeast Asia in particular, there's no contentious work, and they don't have pre-grant or post-grant opposition. So it's all publicly available information generally, these PCTs on international phase of post-publication. So we're not in possession of confidential information that can lead to a conflict in the first place.
A lot of the all of these firms are different when you look at them. So, you know, what's the size of their market? For example, some of the countries, the market is very small, and we've had opportunities to do acquisitions, but really they've become a distraction. So we look at, you know, how big's the market, what's our position, who are their clients, Malcolm mentioned, so we don't have any unnecessary conflicts. You might lose the odd client through a conflict, but by and large, we try and make sure that we don't have any real problems in that regard. And what's their history, their growth, the profile of the people that are in them. You know, they're all different age groups. Some are younger, some are older, some have got a bigger spectrum. And, you know, how well do we know them? But by and large, we're only dealing with people that we've known for some time and also have a very good reputation in our profession. But by and large, the profession has a good reputation generally anyway. But, you know, the firms have to have a decent critical mass and a spread of clients where no one client's, you know, hopefully more than 5 or 6% of the turnover or the revenue. And it's interesting to note that in the IPH group now, with the acquisitions, no one client is more than 2% of the entire revenue of IPH. So we never want to be in a position where we're exposed to any one client too much. I mean, it's wonderful to have a massive client, but on the other hand, you are sort of vulnerable in that regard. So yeah. There's also the factors of the regulatory requirement. What's the local tax system? Countries have all got different corporate taxes, withholding taxes, and, you know, can we operate as a hub for the work going in to say it's wonderful if we can centralise as much as we can out of, for example, Singapore. And so when we look at some of these countries, the tax environment or the financial regulation environment makes them fairly difficult for us to justify an investment in it. Unless we can do it through remote operations. So they're all a bit different. And another aspect we look at are translations and where they're going. What is the regulation changes coming in the future for them? Some of them say have the Madrid Protocol might be imminent for trademarks, or they might have been in it for years. So we look at what are the risks in any of these markets too. So lots of different things, but a good question, and it's one that challenges us all the time. And as I say, no two firms are the same.
Right, I see. So would it be fair to sort of describe it as, you know, when you look to acquire a company, the management of the acquired company must be someone that you have worked with before and someone that you have respect for, right? Is it, and you would look to sort of retain them on, you know, the sort of the management role as they were before going forward. Is that right?
Generally, I think you could say it's probably 99.5% certain that's the case.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That was the last question.
Thank you. There are currently no questions in the queue. If you'd like to ask a question, please press 0101 on your telephone keypad now. Once again, participants with questions to pose or to follow up, please press 01. Our next question, Alex Clark, please go ahead.
Hi guys, congratulations on the result. Just a quick question from me, and it might be a little difficult to answer. With Pizzy setting up in Singapore, how do you think the growth profile of them winning market share over there will go, and is there any analogies we can look at to see sort of what the ramp up and growth could possibly look like?
Alex, I think there's a couple of things. The Pizzy setting up in Singapore, these are a team that are very wonderfully successful at engaging with their clients and attracting work. However, having said that, they are experiencing what everybody experiences who tries to set up in a foreign country. The clients are very stable, and to get them to move from whoever they use at present isn't easy. So the fact that Spruson and Ferguson's been there since 1997 and built up a great client base from all over the world, but it's all been little steps. There are no big whales to bring in. And this is why when people say we're going to set up in Asia, we know just how hard it is. And if the Pizzy's guys, if anyone can do it, the Pizzy's guys can. But we're not expecting any massive ramp up from them, but they have just started really their marketing campaign, and you know, I'm sure they will deliver the results, but I don't think we're going to see I'm sure over a period of years it will happen, but it's not a going to be a whale coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now.
If there are no more questions, it's nearly 1 hour, so it might be appropriate to close the discussion.
Sure. As there are no further questions, I will now hand the session over to you. Please go ahead, David.
Well, thank you very much, and thank everybody. Thank you all for your interest, and we'll be seeing some various of you, I guess, around in the next few days when we do further presentations. But we're very proud of what we've achieved. We know we've got a great future for IPH going forward, and you know, we look forward to delivering year after year. But thank you very much for listening in this morning.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.